We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Stand by for news.
News on the mark.
Newsroom in New York.
You have tuned in turn on the news, the weekly newscast from the radio network, with all the radio coverage of the radio. Now with computerized news readers, with fewer meddling humans, and more aggregated reporting and automated music. Tune in turn on the news each week for the latest news, radio art, and more from our robot reporters, making sure you hear both sides, good and evil, every time you turn on the news.
And then I just, there's good news. Good evening.
By former Washington football team, right?
Yeah.
And hello, Commanders. Washington's NFL team unveiled a new name following years of criticism and controversy. For more than eight decades, the team was known as a name that many people found to be offensive.
Yes.
And so officials finally decided to temporarily change the name in 2020 amid an outcry from Native American activists who accused the team of upholding a racial slur.
The NFL is proud to enter into a new era of tolerance with Washington renaming their team the Washington Commanders. Racism solved. Let's move on.
Former Dolphins head coach Brian Flores is suing the NFL, alleging racism in the hiring process.
Admittedly, not a good look, but at least our coaching staffs are making great strides with diversity.
Only one of the 32 teams has a black head coach.
Okay, she's British. What do they know about football? Look, there may be a lot of white coaches in our league, but they all embrace acceptance.
The head coach for the Las Vegas Raiders resigned after his sexist, racist, and homophobic emails.
Oh, come on. That Gruden stuff happened so long ago.
He resigned in October.
Okay, that was the regular season. How about the postseason? There's been no examples of racial insensitivity. Point is, we are learning from the mistakes. So, from all of us at the NFL, happy Super Bowl History Month.
They filled coins in the fortune fountain, searching for a place in the mountain where the sexless virgins could moan, watched by clergymen with faces of stone. Under the law of human absurdity, when the crying women of Jerusalem are empty of tears, when the bloodthirsty hunters killing their bears to satisfy their hunger for blood, to make the world know that everything good be better for human absurdity. When undertakers refuse to dig, and when cocksure heroes massacre innocent, curious people who underrate the power of human absurdity. Malicious snobs seeming rich, handling the brush to the witch, saying, go and show them our charity. Let the saints praise our activity. Of hope for human absurdity. Reincarnations and ghosts chained together. We'll make exchange in the weather. An apparition will appear for someone tonight and explain that things are not right. In the land of human absurdity, the tyrants of business in Wall Street will moan of the sudden heat when they try to swindle the insane one who realizes that he has the game won. The game of human absurdity. Filled with blockheads, who ambitious crept to bed to experience their wrong imagination that nobody can find compensation for the taste of human absurdity. Sarcastic smiling lawyers underrating their strength, the dwarfs of humanity overrating their length. Even all the stupid fans celebrating and the factory drudges are all underrating the power of human absurdity. Child killing cars on the highway, gloomy smuggler boats on the seaway, and the sinister drug shark in streets of the town. Murderous thieves, hypocrites, they're all falling down to the bottom of human absurdity. Malicious Chinese producing power again, overflowing the world with radioactive rain, and the Russians incriminating USA. I wish them all welcome to the day of the funeral of human absurdity.
All right, let's move on to our top story. It's about the NFL. When you think of the NFL, you're supposed to think of athletes doing exciting things like making amazing catches or throwing incredible passes and running up the middle into a big pile of people for some crazy reason. But in recent years, the actual football part of the NFL has been overshadowed by off-the-field scandals, from the Redskins controversy to the blackballing of Colin Kaepernick, to the league telling players that dark spots on their MRIs was just their brains getting a suntan. And this week brought a whole new scandal for the NFL when former Miami Dolphins coach Brian Flores filed a lawsuit accusing the league of racial discrimination against black coaches. Flores claims that teams are interviewing black coaches with no intention of actually hiring them. He says he had an interview with the Broncos where the executives showed up an hour late and clearly hungover. And he had an interview with the Giants that he knew was bullshit, because the team had already decided to hire a different white coach. And the way he found out that they had already hired somebody is pretty wild.
Flores says he found out from Patriots coach Bill Belichick that the Giants had hired a head coach 3 days before he was scheduled to have an interview with the team.
The complaint states on January 24th, Belichick wrote,
"Sounds like you've landed. Congrats." To which Flores responds, "Did you hear something I didn't hear? Giants! I interviewed on Thursday. I think I have a shot at it." "Got it. I hear from Buffalo, New York Giants that you are their guy. Hope it works out if you want to." "That's definitely what I want. I hope you're right, Coach. Thank you." "Coach, are you talking to Brian Flores or Brian Dable? Just making sure." "Sorry, I f***ed this up. I double-checked and misread the text. I think they're naming Dable. I'm sorry about that, BB." "Thanks, Bill." That's the story of how Brian Dable got listed in Bill Belichick's phone as White Brian.
But for real, though, this was a screw-up by Belichick. And he's a coach, so he can't even blame CTE. Because this is how Flores found out that he already lost the job that he was about to interview for. And you may be wondering, why would an NFL team grant an interview to a black coach if they have no intention of hiring them? Well, for a long time, black head coaches in the NFL were just not a thing, right? In fact, between 1926 and 1989, there were zero black coaches. Nada. Yeah, during that 60-year period, it was easier to find a black person in space than coaching in the NFL. And finally, in 2002, Johnny Cochran, yes, the OJ guy, I guess he was really into football, he threatened to sue the league if it didn't get its act together. And so the NFL created something called the Rooney Rule, which said that at any time that there's an opening for a new coach, at least one minority candidate has to be interviewed for the job. Which is cool, but now Brian Flores is saying that these interviews he's getting, they aren't real. These teams are just going through the motions to satisfy the Rooney Rule. Think of it this way. It's almost like when your mom emails you that her friend from church, her son, is moving to your city and she wants you to be friends with him. And then, yeah, you go get a beer with him just to make your mom happy, but you know for a fact you're never gonna hire him as your friend. And honestly, if you're gonna make someone come to a bullshit interview, the least you can do is let them know ahead of time. Let them know this is a bullshit interview, because that way they can have some fun with it. You know, think how dope it would be to get to an interview knowing you're not going to get the job. Then you can give bullshit interviews. So what would you say is your biggest weakness? I'm deathly afraid of footballs, and I also don't know what a footballs is. Now, look, we don't know for certain why Brian Flores didn't get these jobs, but it's clear that the Rooney Rule, despite its good intentions, has done nothing to solve the NFL's black coaching problem.
The facts are clear that black coaches are not awarded the same opportunities as their white counterparts. Black coaches take longer to get hired. They get fired faster.
A study found that coaches of color averaged shorter tenures than white coaches and were less likely to land another head coaching job after being fired.
There was an academic study that came out across three decades, over 1,000 coaches, finding that black coaches were 114% less likely to be promoted to coordinator positions.
Despite the success of coaches such as Tomlin and Tony Dungy, who both won Super Bowls. When it comes to head coaches, the league is nearly as white now as it was in 1989.
In 2003, when the Rooney Rule was instituted, there were three African-American coaches in the National Football League. We are 19 years removed from the institution and implementation of the Rooney Rule, and there is now one head coach.
Almost 70% of NFL players are black. And there's only one black head coach in the entire league, but the NFL can't be racist. They spray painted a tiny "End Racism" next to the Kansas City Chiefs logo.
Yeah, that's right. Out of 32 teams in the NFL, there's still only one black head coach, which is fewer than the number of black coaches when the Rooney Rule started. And it turns out, not only are black coaches still not getting enough opportunities, but when they do get the job, they have a much shorter leash than white coaches. Yeah. Even if they win, there's still a good chance that they're gonna get fired. Now, is the NFL doing this on purpose to black coaches? Nobody knows. I mean, maybe. Or maybe it's an unconscious bias. And that's what makes racism so hard to prove these days. Because back in the day, when someone was being racist to you, you knew, right? Because they'd be up front. They'd just be like, "Oh, you? You want the head coaching job? Ha ha! You were one funny Negro. I didn't even know Negroes were smart enough to make jokes. Did you know that, Steve? Ha ha ha!" But that's why proving racism for black people in 2022 can be so frustrating, right? Sometimes it feels like, you know, you're the only person in a horror movie who actually knows what's going on. "You gotta believe me, man. There's a serial killer in this camp."
Don't be ridiculous. All these sexy teens are probably stabbing themselves to death. Come on.
But no matter why it's happening, it's clear that black coaches aren't getting the same opportunities in the NFL as their white counterparts, which is a pretty demoralizing situation for black coaches to be in.
NFL owners have stuck to an old game plan when it comes to hiring head coaches. And that, in turn, has sent morale among black coaches plummeting to a new low. It's now so bad, football agent Brian Levy convened a Zoom meeting for many of the black coaches he represents to talk about the Rooney Rule, part workshop, part therapy session.
You see guys that are not as qualified that jump ahead of you, guys that you have trained and that were under you for years that jump. And now, so what is the criteria? You know, the resume doesn't matter anymore.
He's not getting interviewed because he's the qualified coach. He's getting interviewed because they have to hit that quota. You see the black name, you're like, "Oh, he's the Rooney. That's why he's interviewing. He's the Rooney."
Man, you see this shit. The situation is so bad for black coaches that they are voluntarily having Zoom meetings. Do you know how truly unfair something has to be for football coaches to talk about their feelings? Think about it. Even when they win the Super Bowl, they'll be up on the podium that night like, we played well today, then give the boys 20 minutes off tomorrow, and then it's back to the weight room. This is the most exciting day of my life.
Now, a lot of pundits were surprised when Flores got fired by Miami on January 10th because Flores had recorded the Dolphins' first back-to-back winning season since 2003. But the lawsuit explains that behind the scenes, Flores actually clashed with Dolphins owner Stephen Ross. When Flores was hired in 2019, the Dolphins were bad and hoping to get the number one pick in the draft. So according to the lawsuit, Ross attempted to incentivize Flores to purposely lose games by allegedly offering him $100,000 for every loss that season. Wow, but what a waste of money. The Jets will lose for free. But that's pro bono. That's called... That's true? True story? But hold on. It gets bad different. Because Flores also alleges that after the 2019 season, Ross pressured him to recruit an unnamed prominent quarterback, Tom Brady. I got a little tickle in my throat. Does anybody have one of those Tom Brady's? Do you remember? Which would have violated the league's tampering rules. So Flores refused. But then Ross allegedly invited Flores to have lunch on a yacht, where he informed him that the quarterback was conveniently arriving at the marina for an impromptu meeting. Yeah, nothing suspicious there. No more innocent phrase in the English language than, I got somebody I want you to meet down at the docks.
Thank you. majority.
It was back last October, I believe it was. We was going to hold a tent service off at this college town. And we got there about dinner time on Saturday. And different ones of us thought that we ought to get us a mouthful to eat before that we set up the tent. And so we got off of the truck and followed this little bunch of people through this small little bitty patch of woods there. And we come up on a big sign. It says, "Get something to eat here." And I went up and got me two hot dogs and a big orange drink. And before that I could take every mouthful of that food, this whole raft of people come up around me and got me to where I couldn't eat nothing, up like, and I dropped my big orange drink. I did. Well, friends, they commenced to move, and they want so much that I could do but move with them. Well, we commenced to go through all kinds of doors and gates and I don't know what all, and I looked up over one of them, and it says North Gate. And we kept on going through there, and pretty soon we come up on a young boy. And he says, "Ticket, please." And I says, "Friend, I don't have a ticket. I don't even know where it is that I'm going." I did. Well, he says, "Come out as quick as you can." And I says, "I'll do her. I'll turn right around the first chance I get." Well, we kept on moving through there, and pretty soon everybody got where it was that they was a-going. Because they parted and I could see pretty good. I could. And what I seen was this whole raft of people a-setting on these two banks and a-looking at one another across this pretty little green cow pasture. Well, they was. And somebody had tucked and drove white lines all over it and drove posties in it and I don't know what all. And I looked down there and I seen five or six convicts a-running up and down and a-blowing whistles. They was. And then I looked down there and I seen these pretty girls a-wearing these little bitty short dresses and a-dancing around. And so I sat down and thought I'd see what it was that was going to happen. I did. And about the time I got set down good, I looked down there and I seen 30 or 40 men come running out of one end of a great big outhouse down there. They did. And everybody where I was a-setting got up and hollered. And about that time, 30 or 40 come running out of the other end of that outhouse and the other bank full, they got up and hollered. And I asked this fellow that was besetting beside of me, I says, "Friend, what is it that they're hollering for?" Well, he whopped me on the back and he says, "Buddy, have a drink." Well, I says, "I believe I will have another big orange." And I got it and sat back down. And when I got down there again, I seen that them men had got in two little bitty bunches down there. They had rail close together. And they voted. They did. They voted and elected one man apiece. And them two men come out in the middle of that cow pasture and shook hands like they hadn't seen one another in a long time. And then a convict come over to where they was a-standing, and he took out a quarter, and they commenced to odd man right there. They did. Well, after a while, I seen what it was that there's odd man in for. It was that both bunches full of them men wanted this funny-looking little pumpkin to play with. They did, and I know, friends, that they couldn't eat it because they kicked it the whole evening and it never busted. But anyhow, what I was telling was that both bunches full wanted that thing, and one bunch got it, and it made the other bunch just as mad as they could be, and friends, I seen that evening the awfulest fight that I have ever seen in my life. I did. They would run at one another and kick one another and throw one another down and stomp on one another and grind their feet in one another and I don't know what all, and just as fast as one of them would get hurt, they'd tote him off and run another number. Well, they'd done that as long as I sat there. But pretty soon, this boy that had said, "Ticket, please," he come up to me and he says, "Friends, you're going to have to leave because it is that you don't have a ticket." And I says, well, all right. And I got up and left. And I don't know, friends, to this day what it was that there's a-doing down there, but I have studied about it. And I think that it's some kindly of a contest where they see which bunchful of them men can take that pumpkin and run from one end of that cow pasture to the oven without either getting knocked down or stepping in something.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.